So some technical problems here. So I hope I can do this presentation on a PC. I'm not really used to it, and it's also in Polish, the whole menu. So please bear with me when there's some problems. So I'm very happy to be here, and I think as Magda said, I have three works upstairs in the exhibition, and I'm going to talk about two of them here, and also introduce some of my other works. First, I want to say something short about my background. So I'm a visual artist at the moment, living and working in Berlin, and I work a lot with video performance. I do a lot of conceptual works, basically, and choose my medium according to that concept. And during the last 10 years, I'd say, my practice more and more concentrated on projects realized in or in relation to Iran and to the Middle East in a more general sense. This might derive also from my personal background. So I'm half German, half Iranian. My father is Iranian, and he left that country in 1979, so basically during the Islamic Revolution in Iran. And he actually could never go back to that country. I anyhow always had this interest into a region that was somehow distant, but at the same time close to me. And at some point I started to include this interest into my works. So the first work I want to show you is now already 10 years old almost. And it's from my second visit to Iran, so I could also never go as a child. My father did never go, so I did never go back. So I did go when I was already in my 20s, like early 20s. And this work came out of one of those visits. And it's a very short work, and I just will show it to you and then say something about it. So I hope you could read the text. Here it is again. During that visit in Tehran, I filmed a lot on the street. But basically did nothing out of the rest of that video. So just used those 27 seconds, which were actually not filmed by myself. So the only part that was not filmed by myself. And what interested me when doing this, when editing down the video to just those 27 seconds, are the associations that are projected onto the taped white wall when thinking about its creation. So one could ask, is this video actually a documentary? I mean, it's the document of an incident, but it is actually showing no image. And what space does it actually show? And there's not much to see, but what we can hear something. And maybe this ambient noise you're hearing allows for an invisible room to emerge around the lens. So we can hear like the muffled sound of a radio, maybe a distant voice, objects brushing against other objects. Is someone stirring a drink? Or is that faint melody coming from the radio? Is someone typing? Can I distinguish voices I hear from one another? One could maybe also ask, is this video an appropriation? Because those images were not filmed by myself, but by the revolutionary God. So whose gaze is it actually showing? The gaze of the God filming, erasing, blocking the actual footage? And what does it mean to reappropriate the God's footage and declare it as art? One could also ask, as a censored image, is that video talking about censorship and restrictions in Iran, which actually do happen a lot? So, for example, in Iran, lots of books and films are censored, non-available, the internet is censored, one can get arrested and taken into custody for a lot of things, for defying the Islamic rules of the country. So is that video, those 27 seconds, actually talking about this? Or is it maybe talking about how the viewer imagines such restrictions? I mean, if we see the white wall as a projection space for imagination, what is it actually? What interests me in my work, and also when doing this video, is how we look at things and from what perspective. How do local and historical specifics, circumstances, and contexts influence the way we see and interpret it? So this brings me to the second work, which is actually also shown here upstairs on a monitor. And I think it's also expanding on the strategy of appropriating existing images, text, and artistic concepts to put maybe contextual fixations and associations into question. So the work is titled Middle East Coast, West Coast. And I'm not sure if everyone has seen the video. I'm going to show a small excerpt because it's, as you see, it's 22 minutes long, and I'm just showing 5 minutes of the video.
I'm picking.
You don't know where it's at. You know, you just don't know where it's at.
I'm trying to talk to you.
Oh, why do you use words? Why don't you just feel things? You know, just sort of like, you know, let yourself feel things, all that, you know, like trying to understand and everything. That doesn't make any sense. Just feel, you know, just like let yourself meet beautiful people all around, you know, like you can't find them here in because nobody, this is really like horrible here.
Yeah.
The food's bad here, so they don't have, you know, like it's made out of plastic. You know, I have to, you know, like when I was out in, I had my own little garden, you know, I was like really into organic foods, and boy, you know, like you don't know, you're eating like paper and plastic, you don't know, you don't even, you know, that destroys your brain cells, that really like makes you think about systems and everything, you don't know, you know, like you have to be free, you know. Swing with it, you know, like you're just not, like you're fighting it.
Yeah, you think you're just coming out of nowhere, you know, like that nothing existed before you, and that you don't have to bother to read all the books and.
Oh, of course, I never read any books. I just, you know, like I look at the clouds and I go out and on the beach.
How do you even know you're an artist?
I don't know. I don't really know. I don't know if I'm an artist or not. All I know is like I'm doing what I have to do.
You know, you have to know. You have to know a little bit about art to be an artist.
I used to race.
And that's just not NKDs. Just feeling.
I used to race NKDs, you know, before I became an artist. Before I did that, you know, like I was always like, I was with these people who were like really, you know, the true Hell's Angels.
You should have stayed with them.
Oh, you're a bad trip. You're a bad trip.
You have to learn how to cope with bad trips. You know, like the world is in a rosy place with a lot of friendly people.
I can just go out, you know, I can go out into the fields,
you know,
and I can
you
just
can't
lay
accept
down. I can lay down, and I feel the air blowing over me and everything.
If you can't accept resistance.
Listen to the birds.
If your mind is so watery that any kind of intellectual resistance seems like a bad trip to you, then I think that you should be happy out there. and all that sunshine and lying around on your farm.
You're just overly civilized, that's all.
You don't know really about the basics,
the basic beautiful things that really can happen to you when you're out there, and like, you know, in the trees and feeling all that good air around it. Well, you know,
why do you think just because I think that I can't go out and feel
the
air and smell the grass?
You're thinking too much.
Why don't you stop thinking and start feeling, man?
You're really you're just a plastic hippie.
No, you're making a presumption that I don't ever feel anything, that I never smell the grass, that I never experience the sunshine, that I don't dig nature.
I don't think you dig nature.
That's an assumption.
I don't know.
That's an assumption, and I've made lists of assumptions.
You're leading all these big words.
There are certain basic human...
I just use simple words and have simple responses and do simple things. And, you know, I just sort of like... I'm just out there. And I paint, I sculpt, and all this art shit.
You want to think that you're open, you want to think that you're a rebel, and that you can smash out and crack the rest of the world, and that you make delineations.
I just go with it.
You say some people are straight.
I'm really, you know, like, you're on a bad karma. You're a Bardot is off your rocker or something. I don't know.
You're making lots of philosophical assumptions. Lots of them. You've placed yourself in a very, very well, highly delineated position.
You just don't even know it.
You don't even know you're in a system of your own making.
You're ignorant of it. You keep pressing that system on me.
You keep thinking that you can free yourself.
You know, like, I don't need that. I'm into my own head. I live in my head.
That head has limitations. I hate to tell you, but and senses have very, very well-defined limitations. There are just so many things you can sense. There are sense thresholds.
So the audio you're actually hearing is a conversation. So that was held in 1969. So I just shot the image. The audio is the original one from Nancy Holt and Robert Smithson talking in 1969 and doing a conversation they titled East Coast, West Coast. And in that conversation, this is the actual image of it. So it's a black and white video, and they're just sitting at a table smoking and talking, improvising this conversation based on stereotypical and opposing positions of US East Coast and West Coast lifestyle, art, and artists. Holt assumes the role of the intellectual, conceptual artist from New York, while Smithson plays the laid-back Californian, driven by feelings and instinct. So Middle East Coast, West Coast keeps the audio track of the original work, while the actors in the dialogue are replaced by two black-veiled persona talking within a spatially abstract minimal setting. Any talked about locations are bleeped out. So every time you hear this beep, they were actually talking about New York or LA or California. So theoretically, by replacing Holt and Smithson with these two figures, I render them visually identical. So theoretically, you now cannot separate them anymore from their looks or judge them from it. Still, I think, of course, that black cloth brings in another probable preconception. Even if locations are all bleeped out in the conversation, you will most likely associate the talking persona with an Islamic context. I like to say that I use this black cloth in the video as a cliche vehicle in a way that is trying to automatically relocate the conversation to the Middle East and to reassemble those former bipolarities. One might maybe now ask, which part of the conversation actually does fit into this new context, and which person fits the chador or the veil? I ask myself, are there stereotypes in relation to Islam, to the veil, or geographically based ones in relation to the Middle East, comparable to the ones discussed in the conversation between Smithson and Holt? Or are there different ones? When talking about art from the Middle East, one could maybe name one of those stereotypes. This naming of chador art, so the topic of veiled women within arts, which became like a very known topic. So maybe one can say I'm doing a chador art version of this conversation, but of course I'm trying to do that with tongue in cheek, so with humor. Which brings me to the next work, which is also an appropriation, which is a strategy I actually use very much, working with existing artistic concepts, cultural artifacts, images, and objects. The work is recreating a work by American artist Chris Burden. The video advertisement piece, Chris Burden Promo, from 1976. So these are actually images of that work. It's a work I particularly like, I have to say, because it listed, so the work, it worked like this. Burden listed a selection of famous artist names written in bold graphics. So Leonardo da Vinci, Michelangelo, Pablo Picasso, Rembrandt, followed by Chris Burden. And then the disclaimer, paid for by Chris Burden, artist. And he actually broadcasted that piece on US-American TV channels. So he bought advertising slots from those TV channels and broadcasted the actual piece. I think the piece at that time, I think it had its own political dimension, the politics of the artist and the art world, a young artist and his relation to art history, the need to do a sort of self-PR, and maybe the politics of TV and American consumer culture. So I did a work then in 2014, which is basically a reenactment of that work, titled Anahita Razmi Promo. And I made an Iranian version of the work, which formally looked identical, but it had very different preconditions. I'm showing you the little clip of the work.
رضا عباسی، شیرین نشاط، کمال الملک، پرویز تناولی، عباس کیارستمی، آناهیتا رزمی. رضا عباسی، شیرین نشاط، کمال الملک، پرویز تناولی، عباس کیارستمی، آناهیتا رزمی.
So, very short, again. And Burden's piece, actually, so we saw the black and white stills, but the colors were the same. So, as said, the first difference, obviously, in this piece is the different list of names. So I took names of famous Iranian artists of different centuries and backgrounds, trying to relocate Burden's work within a national Iranian context. The second difference is that I contacted Iranian satellite TV channels for broadcasting the ads. So this clip you just saw was also broadcasted by TV channels. So these are recordings from those channels. One channel, for example, was TV Persia. Another one was Andishe TV. And those are channels that work. They are Iranian channels, but they are not based in Iran. So those channels broadcast from somewhere else. And in Iran, officially, when you look at the TV context, there's actually only state TV allowed. So all the other channels, which is like a Persian MTV, for example, they broadcast from somewhere else. They broadcast from Dubai, for example, or from London, like BBC Persia, which is banned in Iran. So there's a variety of those channels which are broadcasting from outside of the country. So I bought those advertisement slots, and the clip was broadcasted 26 times on those different channels. Also during prime time, actually. One also has to say that the audience of those channels is very big, despite the ban on satellite reception in Iran. So estimates are that more than 60% of Iranians own a satellite dish, which are at the same time sometimes taken down. And I can show you a small clip as well. So this has no sound, and it's a very shaky YouTube clip, actually, of police, or I don't know what they are, taking down satellite dishes from roofs in Iran and destroying the satellite dishes. So there's if you're on the roofs in Tehran, for example, you see satellite dishes everywhere, and sometimes they're taken down, but they are replaced as quickly, one has to say. It's a very strange system. So thinking about this context, I would say that this national context changes the original concept of Burden a lot. I like to say that the work becomes an infiltration in a double sense, because I'm on one hand sneaking into the country through those non-official channels, guerrilla channels in a sense, and I'm also trying to sneak into Iranian art history, promoting my hardly existent Iranianness on one side and questioning the complications of putting together such a list on the other. One can also say there is no universally valid canon for Iranian art. As, for example, this list in my clip includes names celebrated within the country, as well as names like Shirin Neshat, who is an internationally celebrated artist, but whose works are banned in Iran and won't appear in any art history book, or any Iranian art history book. I like to think about, so when thinking about Burden's concept, like the initial concept, does it stay the same in a context, like in this national context, reenacted in this national context, or do the other circumstances render it to something completely different? What does this other context generate for the work? Um, I somehow like that it exists as something in between, in an ambivalent state, whose dilemmas are addressed and not resolved. So as an artist, I'm trying to create situations where the idea of the other has much to do with the own, and where the place we are located in is always and inseparably linked with this other location. So my artist persona in this case, for example, which is promoted in Anahita Razmi promo, is a changing and flexible one. So I can place it into an Iranian context, even from outside of Iran. I was in Paris at that time and just recording the clips on the channel. Which brings me to another work, so which is also shown here, and it was, I think it was on the posters as well. It was very funny for me actually seeing it here on big posters in Warsaw, because it's in a way a very personal work. So it is showing my left tattooed arm with the Farsi writing "In Irani Nist," which in English means "this is not Iranian." And thinking about calligraphy and the presentation beforehand, the writing actually it's a very common typeface in Iran, but it's used on traffic signs, for example. So it is basically the opposite of calligraphy. It's more like a very clear branding. And I also like to see the tattoo as a branding that at the same time is trying to question the implications of a branding. Maybe doing something similar to Magritte's "Ceci n'est pas un pipe." At least that's a lot of people like were comparing, that I talked to were comparing it to that work. Still, the tattoo and the work obviously refer to my identity, being half German, half Iranian. And I have to say, when thinking about an identity, also in relation to the work I've shown before, I like the idea that an identity is something that one constructs, something that is at all times flexible and changing. So more of a positioning and not an essence within one's own being. And because I'm working, so I'm often working with myself and my own body in my works, and like to play with this persona in a way. Coming back to this work, when thinking about a tattoo, as said, like a tattoo is very personal. It's there to stay. It cannot be fake, and it always is authentic. But in this case, what about this one then? You know, when thinking about authenticity and like true and free expression, and also thinking about, for example, the female body, especially when it comes to the Middle East. You know, it's always like, where people, I always feel like really like to talk about the liberation of the body, for example, which I try to always see critically and sort of, you know, make this ambiguous statements about it. So not saying like this is wrong or right, but making things that can be read in different ways. Also, when thinking about my works before, when saying this is authentic, you know, when thinking about appropriation as a concept, for example, you can say, I mean, what is authentic about stealing concepts which I do and copying works? And also, when thinking about me working with an Iranian context from outside of Iran, and being someone who doesn't even speak proper Persian, you know, I can barely read this. I mean, I can, but still, you know, it doesn't go much further. So what does it actually mean then when thinking about, you know, also as an artist working with that context, saying like this is an authentic made in Iran work, for example, made in the Middle East, and what does that search actually imply? You know, I think it's actually, like personally, I think it's a misleading search, which is also not benefiting like the local art community, thinking about this true, authentic Iranian voice, for example. And so I want to show the last project then, which is also relating to this notion of made in Iran in a very concrete way, basically, because it was importing goods made in Iran to Berlin. The project was titled Dofard, Underwear Tehran Berlin, and this was the press text in 2015. With Dofard, artist Anahita Razmian transforms the Berlin art space Ukbar into a temporary pop-up store for Iranian underwear. The brand Dofard, in English to individuals, has been producing underwear for more than 50 years in Iran, sold through a little shop in the central bazaar of Tehran. Pants and vests in different shapes and colors are on offer. Based on this unique product range, the temporary Dofard branch in Berlin, open from July 17th to August 9th, is offering a limited range of imported underwear made in Iran. Iran, a country shaped by economic sanctions and restrictive conditions regarding trade and exchange, is currently at a potential turning point in the course of its nuclear talks. The store recognizes this as an opportunity to launch a relatively unknown product and potential bestseller across national borders. The blurring of cultural identities and stereotypes is as much part of the store's concept as the establishment of a functional / dysfunctional Iranian-German underpants trade relationship. Dofard is funded by the Berlin Senate's Cultural Department. So the project was actually, so it was a shop, but it also had a website, a Facebook page, and an advertising campaign. These are photos like from the advertising campaign with models. So also like Iranians in Berlin or Iranian Germans wearing the newly available Iranian apparel as part of the project. So one. So these were like the photos you've just seen were also that we put it on posters and they were advertised all over Berlin, really trying to make this a working shop, not so much communicating it as an art project, but really as a shop which sells this stuff. It was open for 1 month in Berlin, and it had actually a very big response. Also because I think I timed it quite well, because it opened 2 days after the signing of the Iranian nuclear deal, which brought the project a lot of press, apart from art press only. So the project got into political news pages, TV channels, being like the first, you know, Iranian franchise opening after the nuclear deal, which is, anyhow, it's like a ridiculous thought, but it still was communicated that way. So this was also in the Berlin shop. Last year, in Art Brussels, so I redid the shop at Art Brussels in 2016 with an Athens-based project space, and we transformed the booth into an underwear shop. And it was also a context that I very much liked for the project, like selling those underpants next to high art, you know, and they have normal prices. It's just like, you know, normal underwear, so it's like everyone can afford it and just go away with this little thing. And even though it is a funny project, I'd say, but at the same time, when discussing the project with people in the shop, there were really different questions coming in. So one friend, for example, asked me, so what is the actual artwork in this? So, which I think is a very interesting question for me, and it's very hard to say. And at the same time, you know, discussing like expectations towards the nuclear deal with Iran. So can we expect something like this now after the Iranian nuclear deal or not? And what can we expect? I think it's very much worth it to think about the logics of a globalized market, so importing, exporting things, and what are these the logics in this market. And one can basically say, I mean, this won't happen in when thinking about trade and commercial logics. You know, this doesn't make sense. So, yeah, I mean, I think I want to close with that project. And if there's any questions, let me know. Or if you want to buy some underpants. No, it's not open at the moment. It might open in Vienna this year, actually, the shop. Yeah.
If there is any question, jeśli jest jakieś pytanie, podejdę z mikrofonu.
I would like to ask you about the tattoo. Yeah, why you decided to make the tattoo in Persian? Yeah, I'm thinking about group of recipients. Yeah, without the description.
I mean, obviously, I like that the language is Persian, but at the same time, the sentence is saying this is not Iranian, and it makes this. Again, this ambivalent and non, like from saying it doesn't make sense then anymore. At the same time, for me, it does. Like saying it's a branding, it's not a branding at the same time. It is Iranian, it's not Iranian. It's something in between. And it's, I always, like, I had like really mixed reactions to that tattoo, for example, because some people don't get it. They think, why you don't want to be, you know, why don't you want to be Iranian, for example, you know, and not getting this in-between state in a way, which, yeah, and I think that only works in this language then this ambiguity like works.
Hello. Apart from that commercial you showed, has any other work by you reached the audience in Iran? And how is it received?
I did a show now, I think 2 years ago in Tehran, yes. But it was one show in one art space in Tehran, and I basically, the works that I show that were very much selected for that context, one work was especially done for the context, so because a lot of my works can't be shown in Tehran. And I did several talks in Tehran, one for example in a semi-private space where you can show a lot more stuff than in these super official art, like an art university, for example. But like as soon as it gets like a private space and people know each other, then you can even show other stuff. But the show I did was very much concepted for that occasion, that time, and it was. It's very interesting for me, of course, to show in Iran. So, if like another occasion comes, I'll do it, but also like only with a space that makes sense for me, because as said, like a lot of works can't be shown. My works are not very much commercial as well, and in Tehran, the scene, unfortunately, is very much commercial. There's not many project spaces, for example. I think in the city are around 500 galleries, but only two project spaces, which tells a lot also about maybe the circumstances people have to work in.
Thank you, Anahita.
Thank you.
Zapraszamy teraz na kieliszek wina i na koncert, który jest w sali tam. Ja muszę przejść i otworzyć drzwi, także zapraszam bardzo. Przejście jest przez sale wystawowe, które teraz są puste, ale proszę iść śmiało do końca, do takiej szarej ściany i tam jest strzałka. Zapraszam bardzo. Dziękuję.